From time to time, listeners will email us here at radio@ricksteves.com to tell us about a great adventure or discovery they had on their latest trip. Right now, let's check in with some of them at 877-333-7425 to hear what surprises and fun Europe had to offer them and maybe see what we can learn for our next trip. Deb's on the phone in Jane, New York. Deb, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, do you have some experience from a recent trip that you can share with our listeners?
I do. My husband and I were traveling in France, and for the first time ever on a trip to Europe, we took our two dogs with us. They're small dogs. They fit right in the cabin with us, and we found as we walked around the streets of Paris and beyond, people would just walk up to us unintroduced and just pet our dogs and say how wonderful they were.
Wow. I've never met anybody who took their dogs from home to Europe, because a lot of people love their dogs. They're going on vacation, and they're thinking of it, and to be honest, I've never seriously given it much thought, but it sounds like a great sort of icebreaker. I mean, people with little kids have the same kind of joy, but it's a little different to take your dogs. First of all, how do you get a dog on a flight? What are the considerations that way?
Well, if you're going to France, it's very easy. It's just making sure they have their shots. You go to your vet, and he fills out the forms, and you bring them with you. Other countries, you need what's now called the International Pet Scheme, Pet Travel Scheme, or Pet Passport. But for France, it couldn't have been easier.
And then do you pay extra for the dog, or do you carry it onto the airplane? Do you check it downstairs, put it in the overhead locker?
Yeah, we actually put our two dogs, they're Chihuahua mixes, and they fit under the seat in front of us on the plane. We do pay for their tickets as well as ours.
So what would it cost roughly to take a dog to Europe from the United States?
Well, it varies. There are airlines who will do it for about $100, $125. We flew Open Skies, which is a British Air subsidiary. It was a little bit more
so like $100 or $200, and you can take your dog to Europe and back. And then the red tape is you just go to the vet, and they know the hoops to go through, and you get your shots or whatever, so you can, like, you know, in the old days, travelers had to travel with the international certificate of vaccination. Apparently, dogs need to have that today.
Exactly, and make sure that your vet is a USDA-certified vet.
Okay, now, when it comes to taking dogs into hotels around Europe, do you have to let them know you've got a dog when you make the reservation?
Well, we stayed mostly in apartments, but every place we stayed was pet-friendly, and we found that when we were looking for rentals and hotels, more places accepted dogs than didn't.
Was there some kind of a damage deposit or something like this?
Only once. For one of the five places where we stayed.
When you wanted to go to a nice restaurant, did the restaurants let dogs in?
Yes, they did. We had both dogs in restaurants with us, although our one dog seems to like to bite waiters, so she stayed in her little bag. But the other guy who behaves himself got to sit on the chair right next to her.
Ah, because I've got some beautiful photographs of cute little dogs in restaurants from Europeans, but I don't think any of them were tourists. I would imagine it's really easy to sit outside in a restaurant with your dog, but you found that you could take the dogs inside as well.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think that's the case in the United States. We're more worried about stray hairs and so on, right?
Yeah, although most people have dogs under their dining room tables when they're eating dinner if they're dog owners, so it doesn't seem to be much of a stretch to have them in the restaurant.
We
love France.
I know. It just really bugs me in the United States. You can't take kids or dogs into our little local Oktoberfest here. And you go to Germany and they go, what's with this? You got kids, you got dogs, everybody's together. That's family values.
Hey, sure, it's a family affair.
Did your dogs get to meet the locals, other dogs?
They did. The one Chihuahua is a little nippy, so we just kept her on a tight leash or kept her in the bag. The other one, he even got to be good friends with a little female dog down at the Place Monge market in Paris. So we saw her three times that week, and they were good buddies.
Do they stay in touch?
Not so far. We're still working on his iPad skills.
But did you meet the owners of your dog's girlfriend?
Actually, she was the market dog. I think she belonged to one of the organic greengrocers there at the market.
You know, you could write a whole journal about experiences with your dog in Paris or something.
Yeah, well, we're planning on going for 11 weeks to France and hope to get a blog up.
Great idea. And is there any other tips you'd like to give for people who really didn't seriously consider taking their dog to Europe, but it's actually something you'd say to consider?
It is a fantastic way to meet people who you otherwise, locals, who you otherwise wouldn't meet. So I would say do bring them. Just check with your vet to make sure you've dotted all your I's and crossed your T's. But it really enriched our trip.
What was the biggest frustration or limiting factor because you had a dog with you?
Museums.
I was going to ask you about that.
Tough to bring them into museums, although we did take them into a few churches.
Oh, okay. I've been in little village churches in the Cotswolds in England where shepherds actually brought their dogs to church with them, and over the generations you could see where the leashes of the dogs were wearing down the wood, and it's just a charming bit of history that reminds us that some churches are dog-friendly and others aren't.
Definitely my kind of church.
All right. Deb, thanks so much for joining us, and fascinating to think about dogs in Europe.
Thank you.
Say hi to your dogs for me.
Will do.
Earl's on the phone in Dowling Park, Florida. Earl.
Hi, Rick.
What's up?
Well, my wife and I have gone to Europe many times, and until 4 years ago, we'd never been to Poland. It's hard to get to from Florida, but we became so pleased and so happy to visit there that we've gone 4 times now in 4 years, and Warsaw is our favorite town, although we've been to some of the others. We just are really excited about it. We're excited about what the country is doing, you know, following the horrible history that they've had early in the last century.
You know, Earl, it is very interesting when you think about going to Poland, because most people will go to a cute place in Poland, like Krakow, and
Correct. You're
going to the thunderous big city, Warsaw.
No, I know. Nothing wrong with Krakow. We like that.
Right.
And I like Gdansk even better than Krakow for all of the seen amazing.
But you like the energy of Warsaw.
But Warsaw, where we stay, we have an apartment within a 1 mile radius of that apartment, which is in Old Town. It's just unreal what we can see. In other words, we walk a mile one way and we see the palace, we see the fountains, we walk another way. You know, there's just so much there.
You know, Earl, when I'm in Warsaw, what really I marvel at is how in 1945, there was literally not two bricks on top of each other. It was just completely flattened.
No, I know. That's the part that's unreal to me. But we sense that the young people in Poland are being very well educated, and they are not letting them forget the history.
That's great.
It is great.
Now, when you think about the old town of Warsaw, describe how it's been rebuilt, because I understand they were painstaking in rebuilding it just the way it was before the war.
That's correct. We're in Old Town, but our street isn't necessarily rebuilt with that care. But one block away, there is the large square, and that is the area where each building has been designed and built to duplicate what existed before the war.
Even with its higgly-piggly corners and its lack of right angles and this sort of thing?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You said you and your wife can just walk, and within a mile, so many attractions. What are some of the great moments you've had in Warsaw? What's an example of something that would charm us in Warsaw?
Well, it's awfully nice when you can make friends in the country you're visiting. And we have made two great friends in Warsaw. And, of course, that just makes the trip even richer when you can spend time with them.
And I find that in a city like Warsaw that doesn't have a lot of tourists, and in a country that the people have their immediate challenges economically and so on, that they're just really open to meeting visitors that come in from far away.
They are, and there aren't many Americans.
And then, of course, you've got the Warsaw Ghetto and all these very dramatic sights from the Holocaust and the horrors that the Polish people went through in World War II.
Yes. And this year, our friend took us to Chopin's hometown. They idolized Chopin in Warsaw, and they have piano concerts every Sunday.
They have piano concerts outdoors in the park there, don't they?
That's correct, in the Rinky Park. Uh-huh.
Beautiful grand, that big black grand piano under the statue of Chopin to keep the heritage of Poland alive. All right. Well, Earl, I think you've inspired some people to think about Warsaw. Thanks for your call.
Hope so. Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
We're checking in with listeners now at 877-333-7425 with highlights from their latest travels. Share your own travel adventures with us on our radio message board. It's behind the radio tab at ricksteves.com. And Patrick's on the phone in Indiantown, Florida. Patrick, thanks for your call.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Where have you been lately that you'd like to share?
Well, for years on, we lived in North Africa. We used to go to Europe every summer, and we would take our car across the Mediterranean and drive around. And I remember for our family, the best vacation we ever had was in Barcelona.
Why so?
Well, we were able to rent an apartment from a friend of ours that was right downtown in the Barri Gòthic.
For our listeners, the Barri Gòthic is the Gothic quarter in the dark old center of town around the cathedral.
Yeah, And it was a very nice apartment, although it was kind of old. We had to walk up five stories every day, but just walking around. My brother flew down from Belgium. He was living there at the time. And my wife's sister came over from Canada.
Hmm.
And so we had, like, I think there were five of us in the apartment.
You have a pad where all your friends can fly in and rendezvous.
Oh, yeah, that was great. And it was great having an apartment because you could go into the market and buy things and cook.
Everybody goes to the La Boqueria. Did you go over to St. Catherine's Market?
No, we didn't.
Did you go to the La Boqueria? Yeah, the Boqueria is the most, you know, vibrant and everything like that, but it's getting quite touristy, and I would recommend when people are in Barcelona to realize that there's different neighborhood markets that they might enjoy to complement the La Boqueria experience. One thing I enjoyed in Barcelona was simply walking those narrow streets with towering old buildings all around and just browsing through the shops. Every shop has so much character and cute little eateries and so on.
Oh, yeah, we walked so much. I always remember that's the only vacation I can remember where I would get near the end. I would get home at night and my feet were literally bleeding.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to see. And what you might want to do next time is rent a bike, because I found Barcelona is great for biking along the harborfront.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
When you're staying there, Patrick, what do you do for evening entertainment, concerts and so on?
Well, we went to a classical guitar concert. It was in a Gothic church downtown, old, very old. Somebody was just passing out the flyers for it,
right.
And we went, and it was really great. I think the fact that it was in the old church made it even better.
There's something evocative about hearing classical music in classical venues like that.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great idea. Barcelona is a happening city. It's now that the Catalonians can wave their flag more freely, they're really on a roll there culturally, and it's a great opportunity for travelers especially to settle in an apartment like you did.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. I wish we could do it again. We hopefully will.
All right. Well, Patrick from Florida, thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Good
night. Okay.
Bye.
Take care. And Barbara's on the line in Mill Valley, California. Barbara, thanks for your call.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. Got some travel stories for us?
I just wanted to tell people about this amazing event that I went to in Turin, Italy, in Torino, called Salone del Gusto, which is the slow food movement.
Salone del Gusto.
Salone
okay.
del Gusto.
So that is the conference for the slow food people?
It is, yes.
All right.
It's every other year
and it happens
in Torino.
It happens in Turin or Torino every other year.
In October.
What was that like?
It was amazing. You walk into this enormous convention hall and there's just booth after booth after booth.
Wow. Can anybody go?
Yeah. 2012 was the first year that they opened it all to the public.
Oh, what an experience.
It was incredible.
So walk us down the aisles. Now, these are all the people who are passionate about cheese, salami, wine, jams,
yes.
Everything that's made local, that's made traditional, that's made with organic, without chemicals and so on.
That's correct. Yes. And it was organized so you could really literally walk from the heel of the boot of Italy all the way to the Alps, you know, through every state, every locality, you know, experiencing special foods.
Oh, my.
I had pear jam from the last 200 trees in Verona, a salami that you spread on bread, never heard of that. There are people there demonstrating, you know, how to make pizza or whatever. It was just incredible. And lots of wine.
People are so passionate about that in Italy.
They are. And Torino, that area of Italy, the Piedmont area, is where the slow food movement started. So they're particularly passionate about it in that area.
So as you're traveling around Italy, restaurants that are passionate about this are also proud to be part of this group. And they'll put in their window some indication that they are a slow food restaurant.
They will. They will, and they'll identify food on the menu that is slow food presidio, which is food that's being brought back.
Barbara, why do you think that matters? Why are they so excited about it?
Well, if you tasted it, you would know.
That was the leading question. It's so tasty.
Yes, it is, and unique. There are differences that you can't imagine until you've tasted them. And these are local farmers. These are, you know, young people, older people, that are doing this themselves in small farms. So it brings back, you know, it's tradition to them. I had cheese that followed a recipe from they founded, I think, in the 14th century.
Cheese made from milk from a lamb that they actually know, you know. I mean, it's like they've petted that lamb.
Yeah, yeah. And then all over Piedmont, there are things happening during the same time. We took up a ride into the Barolo Wine District, which is really special. I don't know if you've been there.
I have, actually. But to me, it's hard to get my brain around, where do you actually go? How would you know how to enjoy the Barolo Wine District in Piedmont?
I had friends that introduced me to some places, and this happened to be white truffle season as well. So Alba is a good place to start.
Alba, A-L-B-A.
Alba, yeah, that's the home of the white truffles.
Yeah.
And then they're just, you know, the hills are dotted with little villages.
That's my recollection. It's just little villages that, like, they fell out of the sky and they sprinkled all over this beautiful countryside.
It's true.
And with this passion for food in Piedmont. You know, Italians are so into the ingredients, and they get the ingredients just right.
Yeah. There's a restaurant that I love there in Osteria called Gemma's in a little town called Rodino, which I highly recommend. And I know that at one point, someone brought Gemma to San Francisco to a cooking thing, a slow food thing. And I asked her how she liked it. She said, well, it was pretty awful. This is through a translator. I said, why? And she said, well, I couldn't get the ingredients.
Yeah. That's the frustration. If you really know Italian cooking, you just sometimes cannot get the ingredients that you want outside of Italy.
Right. She has her own chickens. So she knows the eggs that go into her pasta. She has her own truffle hunter.
So what was your most memorable taste, your little morsel that you sampled at the slow food convention in Torino?
I think it was that pear jam. Maybe it was because I knew it was so rare, but it was really quite wonderful.
But, you know, that's the whole idea. I mean, the fact that there was only so many pear trees and they had been going back for so long and it was from this particular spot, there's sort of that cultural, historical terroir that they get excited about.
Right. And so I think in general, people don't go to Turin.
They don't.
It's not one of the cities on their list of must visit in Italy. And it's really a beautiful city with some nice, interesting things. Not the least of which is there are a few tourists there.
Yeah, you know, everybody's going to Florence and Siena and Venice and Rome for understandable reasons, but you could go back to Italy and just go to the second-tier cities and find out there's nothing second-tier about them except they're less popular than the ones that have all the famous Michelangelos and Leonardos.
Right. You don't see Renaissance art there, but you find a lot of other kinds of art.
But you got Renaissance Italian love of life bursting all over the place. Yeah, Bologna is similar.
Is it? I have not been there.
Torino and Bologna are those kind of overlooked towns. Barbara, in Mill Valley, California, thanks so much for your little insight. You got me thinking about actually finding out when the next slow food conference is and being in Torino in October.
All right.
Buon appetito. Bye. Take care. Thanks. Bye.
He looks as pretty in the rain as in the sun. Mill Valley. And there's a mountain that belongs to
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Thanks to our colleagues at WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut for their studio help this week. We also get technical help from Andrew Wakeling and Kate Mulhern Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. There's more behind the radio tab at ricksteves.com. Join us again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.